After he taught yoga, Richard Belzer established himself as one of our leading stand-up comics. But then he took on the role of Detective John Munch for the TV show Homicide, Life on the Streets, and since then he's appeared in 9 other television series on 4 different networks, always as Detective Munch. There's even a you say no, it's only 10 now? Oh, my. And there's the Muppets as well.
Yes.
He has taken on a new role now as the protagonist of a novel he's written. It's called I Am Not a Cop. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Belzer to the show today. Hello.
Leonard, at last. I've been wanting to do your show for a long time.
Your first sentence is, I am not a cop. I've just been playing on television so long that people get a little confused sometimes. you could do that commercial, couldn't you? I'm not a cop, but I play one on TV. Is that reserved only to fake doctors?
No, I think it's for fake anything. But I actually had an amazing experience while playing a cop on Homicide. We were filming a scene in an alleyway, and there were a bunch of police cars, but they were prop cars, and detectives and cops dressed in uniform, and I had my gun out, my vest on, my badge on, and we're storming down this alley rehearsing a scene, and a real shoplifter ran around the corner into the middle of the set and looked around and saw all these cops and dropped the bag and surrendered to me. And then he said, oh, expletive, Munch. You know, he recognized me. So, you know, I've always been
satisfied. So what did you do?
Then the real security guard came around the corner and tackled the guy, and he was arrested for stealing film and Q-tips.
In the novel, you say the cops will often stop and offer you a ride. Does that happen in real life?
Well, one time many, many years ago, my wife and I were standing in the streets of New York trying to get a cab, and you know how that is in the rain. And she said, well, honey, you play a cop on TV. Why don't you just ask up? I said, honey, I can't do this. She said, come on, it's rain. You know, we can't.
Impersonating a cop.
So I raised my hand, and a police car pulled up and said, do you need a ride, Mr. Belzer? So I've been blessed with wherever I go, actually, in this country, policemen always come up to me, give me their card, detectives, officers. So the show has been really respected in the police community, which makes it a little bit more than entertainment for me.
Because cops often complain about cop shows. They say they're just too intense. Cops don't live that kind of life. But the shows you've been in have been a lot closer to the reality of police life.
Homicide is revered in police circles, and not because I'm on it, but because it was based on David.
Don't be so modest.
Okay, because of me, it was based on David Simon's book, A Year in the Killing Streets. Of course, we changed it to Life on the Street, Homicide, and that was in that show, Barry Levinson made the camera one of the actors. It was very verite. It was very like Breathless, Jean-Paul Godard, or documentary filmmaking, and it was great because the audience, I think, felt this intimate connection to all of us. And Baltimore was another star of the of the show. No one had ever seen. Everything's been done in L.A. or New York, a back lot. This was real.
And then later, you started appearing as a cop in New York, because they're all those other cop series are not set in Baltimore.
Right, that's right. Well,
except The Wire.
Thanks to Dick Wolf. I did The Wire, by the way. I did the last episode of The Wire. It was fun because a lot of the crew from Homicide is still there, so it was nice to get drunk with the same guys I used to get drunk with. Dick Wolf, in 1990 he did Law and Order, and I think that what he has done is redefine how filmmakers and television people look at New York as not just, this cold, foreboding place, but arguably the greatest location in the world if you're doing the city. I mean, it's New York.
Would you have wanted to do a series about Bridgeport, where you grew up?
That would have been like the Dubliners, the city of the dead. And the snow was general all over Bridgeport.
In an epilogue, you say that you envisioned the novel to be, I'm quoting, a potent mix of Dashiell Hammett with a twist of Oscar Wilde and a dash of Lenny Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And you worked on this book with Michael Black, who is a veteran police officer from South Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
How much of an impact did he have on this book?
Without him, I couldn't have done the book, because he has introduced elements into the book which I'm not well versed in. Like, for instance, in the book, I can perform certain martial art moves and stuff, which I cannot in reality. So the luxury of fictionalizing my life. So Michael was able to write that in a very convincing, compelling way, the physics of this Taekwondo. And also, he's been, 28 years on the force. He was a SWAT team leader, and he's a black belt. And now he's an instructor. So I really felt that just him being having that authentic voice in addition to my make-believe voice helped a lot. I gave him all my notes. We talked a lot, and he really helped me shape this.
Is that the reason you made this into a novel, so that you could be tougher and sexier than you are in real life?
I don't know if I could be possibly any sexier, but tougher, yes. No, I mean, fiction is very intimidating to me. I've written two nonfiction books, and my theory has always been you don't have to make anything up. Reality is so horrific and hysterical and unpredictable and complex that you can go on and on. But when you fictionalize something, you have to make the decision: how believable is it? How fantastic is it? And I think that I call this a reality novel because I use my own name. So I think from the response I'm getting from the critics and readers is that I pulled it off somehow. That people think this has really happened to me. You know, someone said, "Well, I didn't know it was a novel at first." You know, which is great.
Although you have affected a voice that is very much out of the old noir tradition.
Absolutely.
That must have been part of the fun as well in writing this book.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of film noir and of voiceover in those noir films, Murder, My Sweet. And I just love narration, and I love being able to drive a story along with the hero's sardonic take on it. So Dashiell Hammett, certainly, and Chandler and James Caine, they're all big influences, as is Hitchcock, having the protagonist is kind of pursued throughout. I've always liked that format.
Although it's also very much about New York City, mm-hmm. and not just Manhattan.
Right. Well, Brighton Beach. You know, I got tired of Arab villains and Nazi villains. You know, there's always enough of those. So, everybody knows about the vague thing about the former Soviet Union and the current Ukraine, but that's a really dark, fascinating place that I think makes for interesting villains.
But you go to pretty much all. You go to Staten Island in this book too, don't you?
Yeah, we cover.
So you have
the
to do research. Did you do research when you were playing cops?
Oh, definitely, particularly on homicide. There are homicide police that we rode along with, and were on the set. And the book that the show was initially based on had a bunch of real stories in it. Obviously, it was a nonfiction book, and the character that I'm loosely based on, Mr. Landsman, Detective Landsman, who I met, is a fascinating guy. And he's the guy that would come upon a horrific crime scene and crack a joke and break the tension. And so my character, I've been told by other big city police departments that, you know, there's a munch in almost every police department, the guy that has the gallows humor that breaks the tension, because these guys see the most unimaginable things.
And they actually need that person,
yeah.
That wisecracker.
Absolutely.
Well, in this case, as I said, there's that noir style. For example, when you pull into a McDonald's on the way to an interview, you say, "Since I had hopes of getting some info out of this Brad dude, I told them to skip the onions on mine." Onion breath is really, would really be a bad thing for
especially
a cop to have.
Especially if they're interrogating someone. or pretending to be a cop, as I was.
Well, in this book, detectives are dicks. Your personal assistant, Callie, becomes a girl Friday. You're really
yes.
pulling out all the conventions.
Mm-hmm. And I think someone can correct me if they want. I describe my assistant in the novel as a young Michelle Obama type, and I think that may be the first fictional reference to Michelle Obama. I challenge anyone to challenge that.
It probably is true. There have been, I'm sure she was in Barack's second book, but
yeah.
we'll talk about Barack Obama and more about this book after we take a little break.
Sure.
But my guess is Richard Belzer, who's written with the help of Michael Black, I Am Not a Cop, a novel. It is published by Simon & Schuster, and we will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Richard Belzer, who may hold the record for playing the same character on more TV shows and more networks.
Well, I don't, at the risk of being immodest, it's 10 shows which no one will ever be able to.
And a wide range, X-Files, Arrested Development.
Right.
So what happened after you did the second show as
I did
Detective
Homicide,
Munch?
Then we did a crossover with Law & Order. Then I got Law & Order Special Victims Unit. But while I was on Homicide, Gary Carter of X-Files had a script in which took took place in Baltimore, and in the script it said just a detective. There was no name.
It could have been William Henderson, couldn't it?
Yes, but it was Baltimore.
That's an inside joke.
Yeah, I'm hip.
Yeah, but the audience doesn't know. We'll tell them.
Well, that's all right. We just work in this room, you and I. He said, well, detective, let's bring Richard in. You know, Baltimore, homicide is based in Baltimore. And then so many other shows that I did, like you said, Arrested Development, The Beat, The Wire, Sesame Street. There was there's a Munch Muppet, which I can retire from show business. There's a Muppet. And do you have the list there? I'm drawing a blank.
Well, that's so plenty. It's just extraordiary. So, I think it's extraordinary.
Trial by jury. Yeah, no, it's very incredibly flattering, actually, that people would think of me that way.
Didn't you or the character. Once appear, act under the name Richard Brando?
No, I used to sign my papers in school, Marlon Belzer. And the, you know, the.
Well, so did
I wanted
you think,
to be Marlon Brando.
So is that what you wanted to be? Did you want to be an actor all along, or did you think stand-up comedy first?
No, I was terrified of going to show business. I mean, I was always told I was funny. I was thrown out of every school I ever went to. That's not hyperbole. I looked just like Jerry Lewis when I was a little kid, and I did all his bits, and I was just uncontrollably funny and always got in a lot of trouble. And in 1971, kind of on a dare, I answered an ad in the Village Voice for GrooveTube, which at that time was a alternative underground video show that was on three black and white monitors in a little theater before cable, before any of that, before Saturday Night Live. So that's how I got my kind of rebel start, by being counterculture on literally underground television.
You actually had a connection to Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
You were the warm-up comic before the show went on the first season?
First season, yeah. Did some sketches, did the warm-ups. George Carlin, by the way, did the very first show. Yeah, it was 34 years ago, amazingly.
And when you think back to the kinds of material you did then, do you feel proud, or do you think, oh, my God, how could I have done that?
You know, no, I was doing, when I first started, I was doing impressions. I was talking about the news. I mean, it's kind of, and did singing, some singing and falling down and talking to the audience. I'm from the Danny Kaye, Jimmy Durante, Jerry Lewis, full service, you know, sing, dance, do impressions, full, you know, just everything. I feel like the obligation as a performer, that's because I'm old, I guess, is just to give everything you can. So my style was always kind of undefinable and eclectic, but particularly in improvising with audiences, that was my cachet and the thing I have most fun at.
And you seem to be open to everything. You did National Lampoon on
right.
radio.
Mm-hmm.
You had a talk show for a while on
mm-hmm.
ABC.
NBC.
Was it NBC?
Yeah, Brink and Belzer in the Morning. NBC.
And
they
then
made us hit the N.
More recently, you were on Air America.
I was guesting on Air America, yes. I love doing radio. No makeup.
Were you ever worried because you have such a varied group of interests that you'd be typecast as Detective Munch for the rest of your life?
I hope so. It's not like I'm, you know, Skippy the stupid neighbor on some sitcom for 14 years. This is, you know, a complex character who is very close to how I would be if I were in this job, which I could never do. And so it's been a luxury and a dream for me. I would be insane if I said, oh, I want to, you know, do something else. I would do something else, but I would never, you know, it would never preclude the Munch character.
What got you into writing books? This is your third book,
yes.
Isn't it?
From a very young age, I've been an incredibly vociferous reader, and I've been, as long as I can remember, been incredibly distrustful of authority and never really believed anything anybody, adults or anybody, told me for some genetic or whatever reason. And then I became a newspaper reporter, and I started getting caught up in the 60s, of course, the all the murders and the anti-war and the civil rights movement that really galvanized me and made me very interested in being a journalist, which in fact I was for a while. So I've always had the interest. If I wasn't an actor, I'd certainly be a journalist.
So there was UFOs, JFK, and Elvis, conspiracies you don't have to be crazy to believe.
Right.
And then there was How to Be a Stand-Up Comic.
Right, that I did before. I did that in 88, How to Be a Stand-Up Comic, which is a satirical how-to book with some real advice in it.
Do you think that Ann Coulter could be a good stand-up comic?
I think even mentioning her name, I have to shower now. I think
really?
She's a,
you, yeah, you she's hate a, her so much.
Well, hate is too eloquent a word. I just think she's a fascist party doll who is a sensationalist and kind of a vapid, hurtful person.
There are people who believe that entertainers shouldn't express their political opinions. So there's, I mean, in the case of Ann Coulter, I think she also could write novels. She has been writing a fair amount of fiction as it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, people say that and then they elect Ronald Reagan and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And when it suits their purposes, they don't criticize Hollywood. And it's the old cliche. If you're articulate and you care about your country, I don't care what you do. I mean, there are vapid celebrities and there are incredibly smart, articulate celebrities and everything in between. It's just that we're in the eye so much that people, you know, pick on us like we're under a microscope where they wouldn't do that to their neighbor as much. But we'll take it. We can take it.
I understand this is the first of a series of novels.
Yeah. Simon & Schuster, when I pitched the idea, they initially bought two. So the second one is actually virtually complete. It's
again, starring Richard Belzer?
Yes. I am not a cop or a psychic.
And it's based on some other shows.
The book is quickly about the Marilyn Monroe murder and the mob and Vegas, and I get caught up in all that.
So each book has to have a murder to be solved?
A crime or a murder. It doesn't necessarily have to be a murder. It can be a crime.
But cops don't, you know, that's one of the weird things about TV shows about police officers. They always solve the crime.
Well, we have 43 minutes.
And in reality, cops often don't solve the crime.
At all. So, but I mean, I think that's part of the genius of Law and Order is that every episode of the show is standalone. You don't have to say, oh, in the fourth episode, he lost his dreidel. And in episode 9, he's referring to the back on what happened and who's this guy. No, it's just, that's why people, to this day, I mean, I'm amazed. People come up and say, yeah, I watched the show over and over and even the same episode. So that's clearly a testament to the writing and the acting. And the directing.
And since you don't have to do...
And the catering.
You don't have to do it every day. You could still do the other things, right? Well, and how much stand-up do you do these days?
Well, I'm starting to go on more and more. The luxury of being an actor on an ensemble show is that, you know, unlike Chris Maloney and Mariska Hargitay, they work much more than Ice-T and I do. When Ice-T and I get a script and we're interviewed, if a writer will say, well, what do you look for in a script? And we say, days off. So we're lucky because... We don't work as hard as they do. There are some weeks we do, but usually we don't. So I have the luxury to. Plus, when you're an actor, you know, when they're lighting, you're in your dressing room, you're in your trailer. There's a lot of downtime. So I'm constantly reading and, you know, doing something other than just waiting.
And you're usually reading those old great detective novels?
Well, now I'm reading. I don't read them that much. I read a lot. I mean, I watch a lot of old films. The noir films over and over again, the black and white films.
Because if you really want to base yourself on those great novelists, you have to come up with amazing metaphors, don't you? And Raymond Chandler.
Oh, yeah.
It's just extraordinary how he came up with some of those
metaphors. She wasn't much upstairs, but the stairway leading up. I didn't know whether to sleep with her or tear her down for the insurance. You know, that kind of stuff.
She was so blind. She was so blonde. The bishop would have thrown himself through the stained glass windows.
Yeah, right. That's, I mean, just to be able to say stuff like that. So I hope I've approximated it to a degree.
Well, you also threw in Oscar Wilde as a role model. So you have a wide range of people who are difficult to be compared with.
Well, I'm not in not putting myself in that league. I'm aspiring to hint at those people.
And Lenny
How
Bruce.
Was that for a modest?
It's fine. Yeah. Lenny Bruce, of course, the most brilliant ad-libbing comic I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, you haven't seen me live, but I agree.
Well, you had the second.
Yes, okay.
And Richard Belzer will be reading from his book, taking questions from the audience and signing books tomorrow at 7 o'clock at the Lincoln Center Barnes & Noble store. And then he'll be at Comics November 1st. That's on 14th and 9th. Plus, he has a gig in January with Richard Lewis at Town Hall. And for more details on all of those things, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. The novel, I Am Not a Cop, is published by Simon & Schuster, written with the help of Michael Black. My great thanks to Richard Belzer for being on our show, finally.
At last, yes. Thank you, Leonard. The best-selling.
On tomorrow's show, we'll look into whether arts education really matters at a time when many programs are being cut. I'll talk to Rosie Perez, educator Herbert Cole, and also Tom Oppenheim of the Stella Adler School of Acting. And then we'll have a discussion on something most people consider unmentionable, the world of human waste. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Sarah English, and Stephen Valentino. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Fran Jacobs, Leslie Dickstein, Stephanie Hughes, Julia Corcoran, and Carolyn Silvera. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard LoPage, your host. Thanks for listening.